Hey, everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back to you on the Progressive Radio Network and at our 49th Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom call. We have a really, really packed agenda today. We are going to talk about briefly about statehood for the District of Columbia. We are honored to have the great Charles Moreland with us, the first representative from D.C. and also the current senator from D.C., Mike Brown. We're going to get through that and really deal with next week. We will have a major, major session on statehood for D.C. But Charles and Senator Brown have stuff to say to us real quick. Our co-convener, Joel Siegel, will introduce that segment. We are then going to have a real deep discussion of gerrymandering, especially as it takes place in North Carolina. We have the great former mayor of Charlotte, Jennifer Roberts, with us, former Deputy Secretary of State, Robert Wilson, and current Representative John Autry. We're going to have a really good session on North Carolina gerrymandering and gerrymandering in general. And then we are going to go to Arizona, the total clown show of what's going on with the recount there, and a direct report from John Brakey and Ray Lutz, who are inside this world-changing nightmare of the attempted so-called recount of a mere 2.1 million paper ballots. But the good news is that they have digital images there. So we are gonna deal with that. And we'll go as we have gone 48 previous times for an hour and a half or longer if people wanna stay. But for you at Progressive Radio Network, at my Solartopia Green Power and Wellness show, welcome again. We're glad to have you. Your show will go an hour. If you want to stay beyond, and we do go an hour and a half, and then we kibitz for beyond that, go to electionprotection2024.org and dig up the link, and you can join us for the rest of our gathering. It's a really great thing to be with us. We have 62 people so far today on the call, and all you at PRN, you're welcome to join us. We do refrain from the famous George Carlin four-letter words, at least through the first hour, hour and a half, and then we turn off the recording and we cut loose. So we are excited today to have you all again. I'm excited to be with you. My co-conspirator, Joel Siegel, is with us, and we are engineered, as always, by Mike Hirsch with Steve Caruso, and it's a great, great gathering. I'm really happy to be with you all. So I want to start, by the way, as you all know, upwards of 500 bills have been introduced to virtually all the states to restrict voting rights. And it started in Georgia, it's gone to Texas, and now it's in Florida. It's like a virus that's spreading. And since I mentioned virus very quickly, by the way, I've been watching the news reports from India. Anybody that didn't take the COVID seriously and thinks it was a hoax, take a look at what's going on in India. Our hearts go out to the people there. My understanding is upwards of 200,000 people have died in the last week or two. I mean, it's horrifying. They're out of oxygen. I don't have to tell you, just look at CNN or MSNBC. Fox isn't covering it because the COVID doesn't exist over at Fox, but it's horrifying. And again, anybody that doubted the COVID, just take a look at what's happening over there. I do want to mention, in addition to the 500 or so anti-voting rights bills that have been put into the many states, there are also 60 bills being put forward as we speak to curb a woman's right to choose. And it always shocks me that people are yelling at the government that they don't have the right to vaccinate people, which I actually agree with. I think that's dangerous. But if you don't have the government doesn't have the right to vaccinate people, why does it have the right to prevent women from making their reproductive decisions? I'll just leave it at that. This is a nonpartisan call. That was a nonpartisan statement. So we're going to start. We're lucky to have an unscheduled presentation. The great Joel Siegel has gotten us the the great Charles Moreland and the Senator Michael Brown from DC to give us a quick update on what's going on with DC statehood. And then we're gonna go with Jennifer, Robert and John to talk about gerrymandering in North Carolina. And then we'll wind up in Arizona. Joel Siegel, do you wanna introduce this segment, please?
Sure. Harvey, I love you like a brother, but that T-shirt's problematic because it should say North Carolina.
Well, as long as it doesn't say Ohio State, we're okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I know if you remember the Chris Webber mistake where he was supposed to call a time. He didn't remember he called a timeout and there were no timeouts.
You owe us one.
All right, I just want to rub it in your face since we have some Tar Heels who are very famous going to be speaking today. Anyway, I still love you. Anyway.
Go blue, Joel. Go blue.
Right on.
Let's do it.
Charles Moreland, thanks again for being on the show. We've got a situation where it looks like DC statehood, which was passed in the House, HR 51, is going to have a very difficult time in the Senate because of Manchin. Can you tell us, what's happening? And then and can you give us the pleasure of introducing Senator Brown?
Yes. Thank you so much, Joel, Harvey, and everybody. It is with great anticipation and hope for the future that it gives me pleasure to introduce our United States Senator, Mr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much, Charles. It's an honor to be here with you. It's an honor to be here with Mr. Siegel, even though he went to a school, obviously, that has a less than top basketball team. As an alumni of the University of Maryland, even though I'm in a Big Ten now, and I also don't like Michigan, I still harbor many bad feelings about North Carolina for all the ass kickings they gave us. But Joe Manchin is a problem. He's a problem for us, and we're going to have to get over that. He's never been a supporter of DC statehood. Of course, we saw our narrow path to victory in suspension of the filibuster and then getting all 51 Democrats to pass our legislation in the Senate. So we've got a little bit of a harder way to go, but we're also closer than we've ever been. We've passed a bill in the House for the second time. Today, I put something on the internet that's now had almost 15,000 views on DC statehood. I'm gonna have to leave in a couple minutes because local TV is coming to interview me. We are really getting a lot of momentum here. And this is really the time that we have to push. The chance of getting 10 Republicans is slim, to be honest, but if we have to overcome cloture. But we think we have a strong argument for suspension of the rule because when the Constitution, when the part of the Constitution was written that admits states to the Union, it only took a majority vote. It doesn't take 60 votes to become a state. So that's one argument against cloture. And of course, the other is that if you're going to ever suspend the rule, why wouldn't you suspend it for something as basic as giving people their equal, their basic rights of citizenship? If you don't suspend it for something like statehood, what would you suspend it for? So those are two strong arguments that we have that we think, that we're making now on Capitol Hill. And we need more than ever to push and push and push because we've really made a lot of headway and we're making this a national issue. Democrats have put this on the front burner on the national, on their national platform. We see that in HR 1. We see that in the bills they passed last year. This has really become an issue for the Democratic Party of voter suppression because you have 700,000 people whose vote, who don't have representation. Almost 400,000 of those people are African American. So this is a major issue of voter suppression and systematic racism. So We think we're making a lot of headway on this issue. And thanks to guys like Charles Moreland, who have been out there beating the drum for years, people are starting to take notice. And so currently we have 45 Democrats that are on the bill. We only lack a handful of Democrats, Mr. Manchin being one, Angus King, who's an independent, being one, Sinema from Arizona and Kelly from Arizona, but we think we can get them. We're pretty sure we can get them. So now's the time to push, and I think we're doing really well, although it is upsetting that Mr. Manchin stands up against us.
Senator Brown, follow-up question. There are those who, not in the DC statehood movement, but Manchin and other Democrats would say, well, you know what? We're not going to support DC statehood, but we'll support the District of Columbia, the residents being able to vote in a Maryland congressional district. How do you respond to that? How do you and Charles respond to that?
Well, we've already tried that. And the problem with that is that Marylanders would have to agree to that. And we asked the Maryland legislature about 8 years ago whether they would consider it, and they said no. Because you can imagine the kind of resistance we're going to get from the Republican Party if we try to put 450,000 new Democrats into the state of Maryland. In addition to that, you can imagine the kind of resistance we'll get from, you know, most of Maryland is pretty rural, the whole Eastern Shore, for example. And Washington, D.C. would become automatically the largest city in the district. In Maryland, there's only one real urban center in Maryland, and that's Baltimore, and they have a smaller population than the District of Columbia. So they're not anxious to go from the number one position to the number two position, even though they're a majority Democratic city. So there's a lot of resistance in Maryland, and that doesn't even take into account the resistance you get from the District of Columbia. We spent 220 years developing our own, you know, community, and there's a lot of people that wouldn't be anxious in going into Maryland. They would feel that they've lost a lot. Washington, D.C. is a great, everybody that lives here knows it's a great city. It's very vibrant, and we have our own culture that's developed over 220 years, and many Washingtonians want to keep that. So retrocession really isn't an option for us.
Michael, let me add to that by saying retrocession is not an option that the Congress has. Congress does not have the power, constitutionally right. or otherwise, to retrocede the District of Columbia back into Maryland. Maryland gave the District of Columbia gave that portion of Maryland to the United States government, to Congress, absolutely. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution gives Congress exclusive authority over the district. And so it's before the Senate, it's before the Congress, and the Congress, the only thing that they can do is to grant us statehood. In a union of states, any entity, territory, possession, district that is not a state has rights inferior to the states. And as Michael said, statehood is our chosen way. That is what is before us now. And any discussions to do anything else is just blowing smoke. Michael, last week, the Progressive Democrats of America had two speakers last week that put to rest any discussion about cooperating with Puerto Rico. You have to hear it, okay? And so the only solution is DC statehood. And one thing that Michael said, I just want to emphasize real quick, I mentioned it last week. We are close, but close doesn't count. Well, it counts in horseshoes and weapons of mass destruction.
We have been absolutely right.
But failure is not a fate that must befall us. It will befall us if we can do nothing about it, however. And so we're planning and looking at how do we launch a campaign of nonviolent resistance. The citizens of Washington, D.C. must let the world know, must let the Congress know that we will not accept this unacceptable system of government and denial of our basic fundamental rights any longer. We will not accept it.
And so we're going to do a really deep dive into this next week. We want to have Andrea Miller on with you and Senator Brown and Charles Morton, if he'll come back. It will be really great.
Absolutely. And let me just add that the Republicans need to say something. You cannot bring veterans to the Capitol and have them say you don't deserve the same rights that everybody else has. So they always have to have something to say. So they say retrocession, or they say, a constitutional amendment, or they say move. You know, they never say we don't deserve the same rights they do. They just constantly put these obstacles in front of us. And retrocession is exactly as Charles maps it out, a just an obstacle that they don't even have the right to execute.
The wild goose chase.
Wild goose chase.
Right. Exactly. Would you happy to come back? Would you characterize DC as an occupied territory?
Absolutely. I'm about to be interviewed in 15 minutes because I live in the very first house in the District of Columbia, and I put up a gigantic sign the size of a billboard to welcome people to the district, which says, warning, you're entering the District of Columbia, the nation's capital. Caution, residency may result in the loss of your basic civil rights. Be advised, revocation of your rights does not relieve your responsibility for obligations to the state for which you may be liable. Taxation without representation. Here's what the sign looks like, guys, but it's gigantic. And the local news people are on their way over to interview me because that's what we got, 15,000 hits on Twitter today.
My sister said it to me.
Michael is as passionate about statehood as I am.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to do this in great depth next week. If you will come back with Andrea Miller and others, I'll get my sister to come on. And Joel, of course, is a former DC resident. We're going to go into the deep dive. We're going to start talking about what strategies you DC people want to come up with, okay?
Yes, and thank you so much.
We'll come back next week. Joel, do you have anything to add? Joel Siegel?
No, just Senator Brown, it's an honor to have you and Attorney Charles Moreland. And we're with you. And in terms of, you know, civil disobedience or boycotts or whatever, street protest or calls from, you know, citizens outside the district, but whatever, wherever you need us, you know, please let us know.
Okay, so we'll start next week.
Joel and Andre and I had a conference call today. So I just want you to know that. Joe, you want
to? So we will start next week with a really deep strategy discussion.
Thank
you. Senator Brown, it'll be great to have you back. And I'll get all my relatives who live in D.C. and we'll do this.
All right,
thank you
great.
So much for being on with us.
No, thank you, guys. Thanks very much.
All right,
much.
We'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Charles.
I'm gonna invite some other activists who work a lot on this issue to attend the call, and maybe they'll have some views you want to get involved, including the executive director of DC Vote and so on. So anyway,
if you want to network in with us, that would be great. But you can only, you're muted.
Oh, okay. I'm basically gonna try to network with some others who are active who should join in the call.
Right. But you can only come on the call next week if you're wearing that hat.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you guys. Thank you so much. And I want to thank, you didn't have to take it off. Okay, I want to thank Jennifer and Secretary of State Robert Wilson and Representative Autry. We're going to segue now into a discussion of gerrymandering in North Carolina, and then John Brakey and Ray Lutz will take us to Arizona. Joel, do you want to introduce this segment, please? We now have 70 people on the call. So it's great to have you on. Go ahead, Joel.
Sure. Mike Hirsch and Stephen Caruso, thanks for incredible job engineering this call. So we're going to enter the wild and wacky world of gerrymandering. And what we're going to do is I'm going to ask a few questions to our esteemed colleagues and guests. These are not only colleagues, these are my friends. It's always special to have them on a national call. But there's a book. Now, I have nothing to do with the title of the book. Rat, you can see what it's called, right? I think this is the definitive book. If you want to learn about gerrymandering, you got to read this book. It's well written. It's easy read. 2-3 days, you can knock it out.
Can you
show
me again?
Show it again. Put it in the chat. Here, I'll put it in the chat.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, go for it.
All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and ask each of our colleagues. I'll introduce each one, you know, individually. But Harvey, I'm going to start off with you since you are one of the nation's experts on gerrymandering. But a lot of people have heard the word, but they don't really know what it means. What exactly is gerrymandering? Why is it a form of voter suppression? And a little bit about the history, Harvey.
All right, so very, very quickly, because I'm honored with our three guests here that you brought us. Gerrymandering was invented by Governor of Massachusetts in 1812 or 13. His name was Elbridge Gerry. He became the vice president of the United States, actually. He figured out how to stick a whole bunch of Federalists into one district so that his Democrat Republicans, he was a Jeffersonian, could dominate. And gerrymandering is a form of voter suppression. As we all know, it has rigged the state legislatures all over the country. And in 2010, it was really a silent coup pulled off by the Koch brothers. They figured out how to take over the state legislatures and then they gerrymandered the whole system. And we are still paying for that. And frankly, we almost had a second term of Donald Trump in 2020 because the state legislatures were gerrymandered. And all over the country from Ohio and Michigan to Texas and California, well, not California anymore, Arizona, the districts are rigged so that there are far fewer people electing, essentially at this point in time, Republicans, although the Democrats also gerrymander in states where they have control. I'll finish by saying we have one state in the country, California, which has an independent, transparent, multi-partisan districting commission, which actually works. And we have a lot to Arnold Schwarzenegger to thank for that, actually. And in Michigan, they now have a commission as well. They've also had one in Iowa. So what we have in North Carolina is a very egregious form of gerrymandering. And maybe Jennifer Roberts, a former two-term mayor of Charlotte, if you can tell us about it, that'd be great.
Thanks, Harvey. Welcome everyone. And gerrymandering is a big challenge. I put in the chat a couple of groups that are working on it. All on the Line is actually working in 8 targeted states because we know there's a lot at stake with the census, especially this year. There's going to be a big redistribution of congressional seats. And many of those that are gaining a seat, including North Carolina, are going to be looked at very heavily because everyone wants those additional seats. By the way, before we continue, Harvey, I have to tell you, I work for a group called Eco America. We had a climate summit last week, and they had one of our videos was Pete Seeger singing Solartopia.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Wonderful.
So, I just had to tell you before I forgot.
I'm sure he's quelling in the great beyond there.
It was a fabulous video with the Solartopia logo and everything. It was great.
Thank you, Jennifer. Made my day.
Back to gerrymandering. So North Carolina is really the perfect example of how you can change power, because in 2010, we had a congressional delegation of 13 with 7 Democrats and 6 Republicans. In 2012, after the Republicans took the legislature and drew the new maps, we had 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats, even though nobody had moved in or out of the state and the voters were all the same. And so what we see is that the gerrymandering for the last 10 years has suppressed the vote of a lot of people because they feel like they have no choice. And we know that they are looking. There was actually a quote by the Republican strategist in North Carolina when someone asked him on the air why, in a balanced state where there are actually more registered Democrats than Republicans, did you end up with a 10-3 majority? And his answer was, because we couldn't figure out how to make it 11-2. And that was perfectly acceptable in, you know, the GOP perspective. And they've continued to hold the General Assembly. Now, John Autry is also on the line. He is a current Democratic member of the General Assembly and can give you more information about. They are planning to gerrymander to gain back seats. Right now, we have 9 Democrats in the Mecklenburg County Commission. The county is supposed to draw its own district lines. The state legislature has reached in and drawn those in several parts of the state to, again, try to get power back at the local level as well, even in urban centers. So it is taking away the voice of people. It is taking away democracy. We actually had a professor at UNC who looks at democracy in places like Africa and Latin America. And he looked at Democrats and Republicans in North Carolina, the way the vote's distributed, who gets out votes, et cetera. And he determined that we are not a democracy, that we don't have one person to vote. Right there with, you know, Gambia and things like that. So it's not pretty in North Carolina. And there's the gerrymander, flush gerrymander. There's a former candidate, Harry Taylor, who ran against Sue Myrick and discovered gerrymandering and discovered he was running in a district that was unwinnable by a Democrat. And he wrote, he's got a whole website. He's been speaking about this for the past several years, trying to educate the public because it is a wonky topic. It's all about backroom politics and drawing lines and nobody really gets it. So he's been doing a great job. The other group is All on the Line. They are actually having meetings in North Carolina and those other targeted states to get people to weigh in on what represents communities that should not be divided. Because the other thing that we saw in gerrymandering is they had lines going down the middle of the street. They had neighbors on one side. They also had lines going through historically black college campuses, dividing up those. They had a lot of lines that were not explainable, except that they were trying to pack Democrats. And so to reduce the effect of their vote on those Republican districts. So if you don't know about gerrymandering, it is a huge consequence this year as the census puts more seats in certain states, many of which are red, and takes seats away from states like Illinois and New York. And that's the general pattern of population growth. There's also a concern with the census that was started by the Trump administration that immigrants will be undercounted, because they have been afraid to do anything to do with the government. And we have a huge population of immigrants from all over the world here in Charlotte and in North Carolina, many from Mexico, but we also have immigrants from Russia and from Asia and other parts of the world. And again, the fear is that they will be undercounted and obviously not distributed in the correct areas. So that I'm gonna finish and let the current representative, John Autry, speak, and also hats off to Robert Wilson, our former Secretary of State, because he knows this issue very well as well. So okay. Turn over to John.
Jennifer, thank you so much. It's a beautiful presentation. We appreciate that. Joel, do you wanna introduce our next two guests?
Yeah, Mayor Roberts, that was fantastic. You said so much in such a short period of time. Unfortunately, I don't have that skill that you have. That's why you were a mayor. So thank you very much. Yeah, Representative Autry has to leave a little bit earlier, so I wanted to bring him in. But Representative Autry, in my opinion, is the most progressive state representative. He's actually my representative, but Representative Autry, thank you so much for joining us. But the question I wanted to ask you is, you know, since you're in the General Assembly, how does gerrymandering, in your opinion, impact who goes to Congress from North Carolina? Is it a form of, you know, voter suppression? And what are we going to do about it? Because a lot of people hear the word gerrymandering, their eyes glaze over, they begin to fall asleep, they pour, you know, another cup of coffee and wake up. But why is this such an important topic to you?
Well, it's important to me because, you know, the whole redistricting process is based on the principle that will allow voters to pick their representatives. Gerrymandering is just the antithesis of that. It's where elected officials get to pick their voters. And I mean, what could be more undemocratic than something like that? You know, it's going to be an interesting year, for that's for sure, because I am the chair of the House Caucus Recruiting Committee. And we're now actively talking to anybody with a pulse practically, because we probably are not going to have the legislative lines until late in the fall. And we file for the election next November in December of this year. So if we get census data in September, then it's off to the races. Katie, bar the door. And we're anticipating that, as usual, the Republican majority cannot help itself. It's purely there to prop itself up, to keep perpetuating its radical right wing agenda. And it's everything from eliminating pistol purchase permits to going to constitutional open carry to we're probably going to hear a bill this week prohibiting and outlawing and banning the ability of a couple to choose an abortion whenever the fetus is identified with some developmental or birth issues that are going to make a lifetime of those issues that have to be dealt with, and putting that on those parents. So that is the kind of thing that gerrymandering gets you. Radicalism is handled right there at the dais in the legislature every day that we're in session. And, you know, Mayor Roberts mentioned the old comment from the former rules chair of the House, Representative David Lewis, who was asked, you know, why did you get these numbers? He says, because I couldn't figure out a way to get another Republican in a congressional seat.
Right.
Or I would have. And then just last week, once the preliminary appropriation data was released, we had the former executive director of the Republican Party in North Carolina, Dallas Woodhouse, getting quoted about how, well, the Republicans are sure going to gerrymander that one, and we're going to have another Republican representative to go to Washington. Now, he spent the last week trying to walk that back because, I mean, they just can't help themselves. I mean, here is a person who is going ahead and saying, here's our cards. See what we're holding here? And it just is appalling. It's undemocratic. It's un-American. But it certainly puts forward that radical white ring agenda front and center every single day that we serve in the legislature. So
we have some people on stack. Joel, let's hold the question so your next guest can speak, and then we'll take all the questions. I know George and Myla are waiting, but go ahead, please, Joel. And
yeah, I just want to say, John, I missed your Woodstock longer hair. So it looks like you're back in session, right? And you must have gotten your second vaccination, but it's, you know, I'm looking at the old John Autry, but I like both versions of you. I do see you have albums, actually. I haven't seen albums in a long time. He's also a very good guitar player, by the way. He's going to be teaching me a lot of guitar. The question I want to ask you is H.R. 1, the House Bill H.R. 1, it talked about establishing nonpartisan commissions to draw the congressional lines instead of every 10 years, you know, when you have the census. And Mayor Roberts already talked about one of the most significant problems, and that's, you know, those who were residents. But if you were, you know, if you could wave the magic wand in the North Carolina General Assembly, how would you design these commissions so that they would be effective and fair, so that, you know, the democracy would reign, not, you know, subjective partisan, draw, you know, congressional line drawing? How would you do it?
Well, first of all, don't let an elected representative in the House or the Senate anywhere near that place where this is taking, you know, where this is going to be conducted.
Okay.
We have a pretty good model that there's a professor at Duke University by the name of Mattingly, who has done some very interesting work on how demographics affect elections and how people get their votes counted, and some people get left by the side. And certainly I appreciate what, I think it was Harvey who said earlier that, you know, gerrymandering is voter suppression, because convincing a person that their vote will not have an effect is one of the easiest way to suppress the vote. I mean, you don't have to draw any lines to do that, but certainly those lines have played havoc here in North Carolina since then. We have, just 2 weeks ago, another bill to expand the voucher program for school tuition. They love making it a case about, well, these underserved people with low incomes, they need this extra money to get them into the places that they need to secure a full and proper education for their children. But yet at the same time, that legislature is ignoring a court ordered decision regarding the Leandro case that has been going on here in North Carolina for about 15, 16 years, dealing with how the legislature fails on a daily basis to adhere to its constitutional responsibility to provide a full and high quality education to every child in North Carolina. So they ignore those things and prop up these straw men and make these arguments that are really just canards furthering the undermining of our public schools. We have probably 500,000 of the 10 and a half million North Carolinians that have no health coverage. They are between the gap of those who can qualify for Medicaid and those who can actually afford health insurance. North Carolina is one of those states. I think there's only 12 now, 11. It's only 11 states now that have not expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And so we've got another bill that's being filed to push that forward. It'll be a Democratic bill. And of course the Republicans will come along and put one forth that nothing will ever happen with, just like it happened in the last session. But surely we understand that gerrymandering is what has us locked in the grasp of this radical right-wing agenda that is being propelled. And I'm just looking at the clock here. I've got caucus at 6 o'clock. I'm gonna have to get off pretty soon. But look, since the Republicans took control of the North Carolina General Assembly with the election in 2010, this has been a petri dish for ALEC to try out what's new and refreshing for them, and then let it spread to all the other states. Now, we did have something interesting last week that has put the kibosh on several of their anti-LGBTQ bills that were filed, and that is the announcement by Apple that they're going to come into North Carolina with a $3 billion investment and 3,000 new jobs. And guess what? The speaker all of a sudden announces that the anti-transgender bill regarding high school athletics is not going to be moving anywhere. But of course, it didn't have anything to do with Apple coming to town. Right. I'm with it. So we have a lot of work to do. And it just seems, I just want to see the day to where I get to serve in the majority.
Okay. So, and that has to do, hopefully, if you'll take a look at the California Commission and the one that's now in Michigan, the one in California seems to work pretty well. And it was opposed by the Democrats. And if push come to shove, maybe you can get Arnold Schwarzenegger into North Carolina to help you get that fixed. Let's move on. Representative Autry, thank you so much. We have former Secretary of State Robert Wilson. Joel, do you want to introduce him?
Oh, wait one second. Can I? Oh, did he already leave? I had a question for Mr. Autry.
Go ahead real quick.
Is he gone?
Here.
I'm here.
Oh, good. Oh, okay. I have a friend who just lives right down the block from where Andrew Brown was gunned down on April 21st. Mm-hmm. And she tells me, I watched the court proceedings where the judge was deciding whether or not to release the video footage of what happened. And an attorney representing an adjacent county said that even though his men were called in, that county was too poor to afford body cameras, and they wanted to be absolved and released from the court proceedings because they just couldn't afford those body cameras. And that's a Perquimans County adjacent to Pasquotank. But so I'm wondering about, you know, making body cam cameras mandatory for all police. And then I'm also wondering, my friend has been telling me for some time, she lives in a neighborhood that's kind of a 50-50 black, white, kind of a mix, but they have the foulest water she has ever had anywhere. It is absolutely toxic. And so I just wanted to bring that to your attention. That's in Elizabeth City where Andrew Brown was shot. The water.
Oh no.
Well, you're bringing, you're certainly speaking to the choir about those issues. We have a law here in North Carolina that prohibits the release of body camera footage without a court order. Even though the police, the sheriff, all the parties involved want to have that footage released, they can't do it by state law. And so you saw the proceedings last week they had to go through. And that, what could be more painful than the loss of your loved one, than to be prohibited from being able to view the footage that lets you see for your own eyes what actually took place. And so we have, Democrats filed a bill to repeal that law. We have several, I was involved with a couple of other of my colleagues on the Democratic side. We filed 7 bills on Earth Day, all dealing with environmental issues that are going completely ignored here in North Carolina because everybody's in the majority is taking their marching orders from ALEC. So I thank you for your comment and I appreciate your concern there. Elizabeth City is a wonderful little part of our state, but it's having a lot of pain right now. And it's pain that is being inflicted by the majority in the General Assembly.
And the majority is a gerrymandered majority. We have a couple more hands, but we want to stick with gerrymandering. And we have the former Secretary of State with us. Joel, introduce him. And then at the top of the hour, we're going to go to Arizona. John Brakey has been patiently waiting. John Autry, thank you for that, man. That was really great. Jennifer Roberts also is still with us. Jennifer, do you want to? Thank you so much. And Jennifer, do you want to say anything? And then Joel, introduce Secretary of State Robert Wilson. And then we have John Brakey. We're going to go to Arizona soon. We still have 75 people on this call, so we're rolling along. Okay, go ahead.
The only thing I could add to what Representative Autry said is that those kind of laws, like the one, I think North Carolina is the only state in the country that requires you go through a court to get release of body camera footage, which is paid for by public money with public servants getting the body camera footage. It's ridiculous. But we're the only state. We were one of the last states to raise the juvenile offender age so that we had 16-year-olds going to adult prison. This is what you get when you have an unrepresentative state government. And it is not what North Carolina values are, but we have been hijacked. And so it results in very bad laws, and we need help. So anything people can do against gerrymandering, that On the Line is doing a lot of good work, Flush Gerrymander is doing good work, we absolutely need to end this practice.
Absolutely. Joel, did you want to proceed with Robert Wilson?
Yeah, Undersecretary.
John Brady, thank you for sticking with us. We'll be getting to you in a bit.
Robert Wilson. Is Robert still with us?
Oh, okay. How are we doing?
What's up? How are you, brother?
Good to see you, Joel. Good to see everybody. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Robert?
All right. Well, good to be here. And I think we just about covered everything. I think Mayor
Robert, I got questions for you.
Did an outstanding job. And I would simply say to you that what I see is day by day, what we're witnessing is the desecration of our democracy. And what we are creating is a self-destructive, defiant attitude, which I think is going to create a crisis for us. Yet, we continue to play high stakes, low reward chicken, and partisan politics. And to me, gerrymandering is, in fact, a voter suppression tool. And it has been used very effectively for the last 10, 12 years in North Carolina. And I would say to those who are listening that the only way I see that we can get out of this is we're going to have to create an independent commission here in the state of North Carolina, just like they have in California. Because if we don't, we're going to stay in the predicament that we're in. You know, right now we have a judicial system that is terrible. Also, we've gotten ourselves in a situation in our last election where we lost 9 judges all along the board, including in the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Now that, to me, is a bellwether moment for us for one simple reason in terms of gerrymandering. I predict that what the majority party will do now is they're going to gerrymander House districts, Senate districts, and congressional districts this time around. And they're going to say, okay, well, take me to court. And when we take them to court, they're going to have a system that is basically going to favor them in court. And we're going to have a hard time in the North Carolina Supreme Court with the Chief Justice now being of that majority party. Now, if we appeal this and it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, then we got another problem there. So I think we're going to, have some major problems, with redistricting all along the line. And gerrymandering in terms of how they're going to draw these districts for this upcoming election, especially when they're going to let you know in September an election is supposed to be coming. You're supposed to start campaigning in December, elections in March. So it's going to create some major, major problems. And what we have done is we have allowed our elected officials to pick their voters rather than the voters picking their elected officials.
Brother Wilson, I'm sorry.
Jennifer wanted to jump in, Joel. Jennifer.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
I just had to impress on one more thing, because we had that horrible HB2 legislation that was passed in North Carolina, cost our state billions of dollars, LGBT discriminatory. We looked at who voted for that legislation. 95% of, they were all Republicans, 95% of them had won their election in by double digits or had had no opponent in the previous race because they're gerrymandered and they know they can't be beaten. And so what you also get with gerrymandering is really bad legislation, extreme legislation, because the people voting on it feel safe and they're not representing the public.
That's right. Robert, I'm got a few questions for you. First of all, how much of gerrymandering is strictly based on race? And that's getting African Americans or students, you know, out of districts that might go Democratic so that Republicans can win.
I would tell you, in my opinion, 90% of it.
Okay, so it's 90%.
You know, the idea with gerrymandering is to make sure you weaken your opponent and that you stack your district so that, and I'll give you a prime example of this. In the state of North Carolina right now, the Democrats are the majority party. Second largest party in the state of North Carolina are unaffiliated. Third party are the Republicans. Now, it makes zero sense that you basically have the minority party with the majority of representation in government, in the feds, and in state government. That makes zero sense. But what they have done and done it effectively is been able to stack and pack particular people of color in certain districts where there's about a 70-80% district in which minorities make up that district. That is insane. You know, even though, and they will go right down the street and draw a district where you may be in one district on one side of the street and in another district on the other side of the street. They've done it at the North Carolina A&T State University. They're doing it all over the place. And now they feel like they have a license to do it because they are basically controlling the judicial system, which up until this year, we did have some sense of check and balance on them in terms of the state Supreme Court. But now that is gone because we no longer have the Chief Justice. And the Chief Justice is the one who would decide if there is a case that is brought before the Supreme Court, when they will put it on the calendar. He can put it on the calendar whenever he wants to. So he can hold it for whenever he wants to. So we're in a mess all the way around.
The joke is that we're going to go till 6:10 on this. John Brakey, if you can join us at 6:10, we'll go to Arizona. So we got 7 more minutes on this. It's been an incredibly great session. The joke is that at North Carolina A&T, the A is in one district and the T is in the other one. But that's how gerrymandering works, right?
That's it.
Yeah, the question I want to ask you, Robert, is if it's going to be hard to reform what I would call Jim Crow gerrymandering, 21st century Jim Crow gerrymandering, is it not the case then that the Congress has to intervene and even the president? Because under the Constitution, yes, states are given certain powers that are vested in them regarding voting, but the ultimate authority in the Constitution is in the U.S. Congress.
It is.
Could the Congress stop gerrymandering?
Yeah. The Congress, if H.R. 1 is passed the way it's been written, and I think one of the reasons why Republicans are vociferously against H.R. 1 is because of the campaign finance provisions and the gerrymandering provisions. The gerrymandering provisions allows for these nonpartisan commissions by federal law. And, the question is, what are we going to do about it? You know, well, what can we do to impact. North Carolina is considered the most gerrymandered state in the nation. And you've seen it, Robert, up front. But I mean, there's some states where the governors actually have veto power over, you know, the state legislature. But I don't see how we can do this without the president. I don't think Biden has weighed in on gerrymandering. I don't see where the Democratic Party really has weighed in on gerrymandering to the maximum extent that I think it needs to, but I'd like to hear your perspective.
Well, due to Jim Crow, in the Voting Rights Bill, there was a section in there that said that you couldn't draw a district or have a district unless the feds signed off on it in certain states. The states had to have the feds sign off on their districts if they were going to have that. They struck that part of that out of that legislation when they came back about 4 or 5 years ago, and they took that out of that legislation. That part needs to be reinstituted back into the federal legislation, where in many of these southern states, those districts that are being drawn need to be approved by the federal government rather than approved by the state legislatures.
Thank you, Robert. Listen,
yes, Robert. And that, now that's part of HB 4, and we're going to end this in 4 minutes. We've had John Brakey and Jerry and Ray Lutz waiting very patiently to give us the report from Arizona. We need to revisit this next week, because I believe, and Joel, correct me if I'm wrong, that if HB 4, the John Lewis bill, was instituted, that gerrymandering could be dealt with through that bill. Is that true?
That requires more discussion, because HR 1 is supposed to deal with that. HR 4 deals with pre-clearance provisions, right, of the 65 Civil Rights Act being restored. It's not clear, though, how that impacts gerrymandering. That's a gray area in the law.
All right, we're going to have to continue this. This was a truly great discussion. Gerrymandering will be a topic next week. I hope you guys can join us. Senator Roberts, Deputy Secretary Robert Wilson, and John Autry has gone from us. We do have a couple of questions, but I think if we can move forward to get to Arizona. I know a lot of people are anxiously awaiting, but this could not have been better. And we need to revisit this next week and in the coming weeks to find a solution to this problem. It is absolutely destroying our democracy, gerrymandering. And I do, by the way, know an actual person named Jerry Mander. He's a great author, and maybe I can get him to come on the call. And he'll have a lot to say about it, actually. Joel, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, for the passionate people who had questions, perhaps they can be asked next Monday.
Yes, please, because we know that people really want to jump in with Arizona. Okay, Jennifer, thank you so much. Robert, thank you. Please come back, and we will have a special session next devoted to the federal and other solutions for gerrymandering, which we've really got to deal with. So thank you so much for stating the problem so clearly. Steve Caruso, we had a 1 minute video, if you want to throw it up there, on Arizona. And then we have Gray Lutz and John Brakey, literally the people in this country who know the most and are doing the most about this this recount situation in Arizona. Steve, do you have that thing? Can you throw up that 1 minute video from Arizona? Real quick, I think it's got Cindy McCain in it. Yep, there we go. Oh, there we go. Go ahead.
The whole thing is ludicrous, quite frankly. It's ludicrous. And this also comes from a state party in Arizona that refused to be audited themselves on votes that were cast within their own party communications. So, the election is over. Biden won.